It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
All right, guys, second day doing this. Got to step in for Scraby. All right, Will, hit it.
Number five.
All right, almost a year ago to the date, Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier was injured in a Monday night football game versus Cincinnati Bengals with a severe spinal injury. He made a heroic appearance in the 2018 NFL draft as he walked up to the podium and made the Steelers pick. His recovery has taken some big steps as he began running in late November, and then as recently a couple days ago, he was shown deadlifting on Twitter and ESPN. And I understand the love for the game, but with almost being paralyzed, should Ryan Shazier try and play football again? Coach?
From what I saw, even when he walked across that stage at the draft, he's got a long ways to go. I don't think he should play. I'd have to look and see if he's still limping, because he was limping pretty bad that night. I just don't see it.
Tony?
You guys know how I feel, but I'm never one to tell a guy to stop playing. If his family's cool with it, I'm cool with it. Watching him do that deadlift was super impressive. It was about 225. I lost all the weight on there. It was 245 plates on there. Might have been a little bit more. He did it. Perfect technique. I saw that too when he first came on. He walked on. He had a definite noticeable limp. I'm assuming the way he was deadlifting, I would bet that limp is not nearly as easily seen as it was last time. But I'm hoping for the best for him, though.
All right, Will.
Number four.
The Tennessee Titans were winning on and off the field last night. Darren Revelle tweeted after Derrick Henry's 99-yard touchdown run, saying, "Please don't call that one of the best runs in NFL history. If you call it anything, call it the worst tackling jobs in NFL history." The Titans' Twitter account clapped back in a big way, saying, "Shut up, nerd. Hashtag tighten up." Was this tweet justified to respond to Revelle? Tony?
Was it justified? I don't know, but it certainly was funny. I had to get on there and stir the pot. I got into those mentions and had the laughing emoji going on there a few times because it was a good clapback. You don't see organizational Twitter accounts clap back like that. That was just, it was good banter. I give it an A+ for it.
Coach? Hey, I don't care. Second guy ever to do something in the National Football League. That was a hell of an effort. I've always liked Derrick Henry. I've been a little disappointed how he's been used in his career at Tennessee, but that was absolutely fantastic last night. And maybe a lot of young players now will bring back the old stiff arm.
All right, Will.
Number three.
All right, ex-Marlins president David Sampson says The Padres kept real, fake, and medical records on players. The Padres lied, Sampson said. They had an entire medical file on a player and didn't disclose it. Two sets of medical records are what they did. Padres general manager A.J. Preller shouldn't be allowed in the game. It's beyond comprehension that he's still working. They did it to the Red Sox, and there's a lot of many things you mess with, but you don't mess with that. And in 2016, the Marlins and Padres agreed to a 7-player deal that set right-hander Andrew Cashner, Colin Ray to Miami. However, Ray suffered an elbow strain in his first start with the Marlins and sent back to San Diego. MLB suspended Preller in 2016 for 30 days without pay for withholding medical information on the left-hander Drew Pomeranz in a trade with the Red Sox. Do you think Sampson is out of line for his comments, or do you think there's some merit there? Said.
My take would be, tell me something I didn't already know. I mean, this is 2 years ago. I mean, and David Sampson, what's his role with the Marlins? Now, he doesn't have a role with the Marlins. He's out of baseball, far as I know. So, you know, this is just dumb. I mean, AJ paid the price. The Padres were in the wrong, and Major League Baseball took care of it. So, I mean, tell me something I didn't know, David Sampson.
David seems quite bitter. He's been on a 2-year rant about this same thing. It didn't cost him his job, by the way.
Better get to therapy.
He had issues long before he got a player that
was hurt. His stepfather's the one that owned the Marlins.
Exactly, which a lot of people argue that's why he had the job in the first place.
Well, you talk to people that work for the Marlins, they'll tell you why he had the job in the first place.
Either way, this is just sour grapes right here. Mr. Sampson's got to move on.
Jeez.
Number two.
Georgia Tech got their new coach in Temple's head coach Jeff Collins, but yesterday it was reported that Ken Whisenhunt had pulled his name out of contention for the head coaching job. If Whisenhunt had still had his name in the contention for the job, would this be a distraction for the Chargers making a playoff run? Tony?
Yeah, probably. I mean, Ken Whisenhunt is a professional. I would assume he would do his job and put his all into it like he would. But it's got to be somewhat of a distraction for the players. You're losing your offensive coordinator on a year in which your offense has been really good. So I'm sure it's a little bit of a distraction. But Ken Whisenhunt, as I said, is a pro. He would know how to handle it.
Whisenhunt is an NFL coach. He doesn't know how to run the option. That's probably what they're going to continue to run their with Paul Johnson done it the last 11 years at Georgia Tech. I think they got a good up-and-coming coach. Not surprised Whisenhunt pulled out. Didn't even go down to Atlanta for the interview. The athletic director actually is a former teammate of his, Stansberry, the athletic director, and he pulled out of it. It sounded good, but he's a pro coach.
All right.
Number one.
Kyle Murray was drafted by the Oakland A's in the first round, but has put up monster numbers at Oklahoma this season. Over 1,000 rushing yards, 11 touchdowns on the ground, and 4,400 yards passing, and 43 touchdowns with 7 interceptions. Todd McShay has stated, if he chooses football over baseball, he'd be a first-round talent. If he wins the Heisman, should Murray choose football over baseball? Coach?
I think he wants to play baseball. I think his size, I think it probably fits baseball. I mean, he can go play baseball for 3 years. If it doesn't work out, you know, he's still going to be able to come back and try to make it a run in the National Football League. But, you know, Oakland gave him quite a bit of money, and I think that's probably where he needs to go right now.
Tony?
Whether he should or not, I don't think is the right question, because obviously he could do either or. He could do both if he really wanted to. But you look at his size, 5'7". I mean, we're talking, you know, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees being the shortest quarterbacks in the league right
they're
now.
They're 6 foot, and maybe 5'11".
Yeah, they're probably more like 5'11".
Russell Wilson is 5'11".
Definitely. So I have a hard time seeing a 5'7 quarterback in NFL doing anything other than running a wildcat or, you know, maybe tricking some teams every once in a while, but it wouldn't work long-term wise. I think it's smarter, obviously, baseball, a lot more longevity. He can play. He can play the game of baseball. Obviously, he's Heisman Trophy hopeful, so he can play that game too, but I think he's making the right decision going baseball.
Wasn't he making more than his college coach
right.
playing at Oklahoma right now?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's always an interesting conversation for you and your coach.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Good Big Five there, Thomas and Will. Good job. We're going to step away when we come. Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. Coach Kinter sitting in for Chris Ella, who is out with the girls basketball team at San Diego State. Joining us now, Beto Duran, Spectrum Sportsnet contributor, host of the new LA Times Sports podcast. Beto, how you doing today, brother?
I'm good, gentlemen.
Shout out for those nice boxing gloves and mitts you sent me, man. You saw me working on the gram a little bit, and you sent me some nice gear, man. I appreciate you.
Look at you. You and, like, all these athletes that retire, you either get really fat or you want to find another sport. And I respect because Jerry Harrison's been doing it, and, you know, Jerry's the best ever at anything. Ask him.
Yeah,
and,
he'll tell you
I
that.
I saw you working out, and then I saw the boxing gloves you had, and I'm like, man, you can't be using, like, the ones that everybody has.
They were a little busted. That's all right, though.
I mean,
hey, you're right.
Everlasting sent you there. You're hooked up. You got the wraps. You got the gloves. Hey, just like me, you got to look the part. It's solid, baby.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about these Lakers, man. They have really turned around, 11-3 in their last 14 games. LeBron James is being LeBron James, but at the same time, at least from my perspective, it looks like he's been able to show some patience, especially early on in the game, to let these young guys develop.
Because these young guys are figuring out what it's like to play with a superstar like LeBron James. They're figuring out what it is. Where they're supposed to be on the floor. It's also they're figuring out what they are expected to do, not just from the players, but also from their coaches and everybody else. It's not easy to show up and say, hey, let me run around and look at LeBron for 48 minutes when you're like, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to do my job too. So that's awesome. Last time I talked to you, the whole world was panicking, right? Luke was getting fired. Right? It's give it time and breathe, and guys are starting to see the role. Ball, who's actually looking like he should have been a number two pick the last couple of days.
Hey, Beto, you know, watching the game the other night, Brandon Ingram got hurt, you know, about 6 minutes into the game, and I know he's not going to be on the road trip right now. How do you think the Lakers are going to try to deal with on play with him being out of the lineup for at least two games, if not more?
Yeah, Ingram's not on the trip, ankle injury, but he hasn't looked like the Ingram that we were really hyped about last year. It's even when you talk to him, he doesn't have the biggest personality. He's really a reserved, and he kind of just shrugs his shoulders at times. The body language isn't good. Like, but you know that he has the ability to figure things out, and a lot of it has to do with how is he going to share the ball with LeBron? What are his role? Like, that's another young player that's really having trouble with the adjustment, because you want to get excited for him, but he's giving you those flashes. And I think the injury is at a time where the Lakers are going to say, you know what, you're injured, but let's also give you a couple extra days just to make sure your mind is cleared and make sure you figure things out. And just like that mental rest always helps everybody, especially with young players like him. So Ingram is a player that I want to get super excited for him, but he's just not giving us anything where you're like, oh, yeah. I know Tony's probably frustrated.
You know, I haven't been frustrated only because you've seen the emergence of Kyle Kuzma really turn his game up, yep, really all around. And I have to agree with you. Brandon Ingram does seem to be the least comfortable out of all the young guys playing with LeBron James. Let me ask you this. With him going down as an injury, if the Lakers start running off games here where they run off 5, 6, 7 straight, does that open up the organization's mindset maybe that Brandon Ingram might be the one that is the player that gets moved to get that other piece?
Tony, I love you, man. They're going to run 5, 6, 7 straight. Come on. I mean, yeah, they're good right now, but they're not going to run 5, 6, 7 straight. Anyways, Ingram is a player that everybody asked about. And when you talk to Rob Pelinka and when you hear them say, like, oh, you know, we like our team, but it's not like anybody's untouchable. Like, if you can go and get a haul and get a superstar back or somebody big and you can do things, why would you not trade an Ingram player? Not saying that he's on the block.
Right.
But if you're figuring out that this kid, maybe he's not going to fit into your system moving forward, and everybody, you know this, you trade prospects early, not too late. And I think Ingram is that one where he's getting to that point where you're going to figure out exactly what he is. So you could really sell him right now and get a lot in return.
Beto, you mentioned Lonzo Ball, and he had that thunderous dunk going down the lane the other night. And, you know, he was starting to get a little bit more aggressive, but apparently he had a conversation with LeBron, and LeBron said, man, you got to attack the rim a little bit more. And really, the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's been a completely different player. And, you know, the other night he hit that big three-pointer down the stretch and playing with a lot of confidence right now. And that upper body strength that he put on during the offseason, I think, is really paying big dividends right now.
Yeah, Coach, we forget that he's yet to play an entire NBA season.
Yeah,
he's yet to play 82 games. And making that transition from UCLA to the NBA, it takes a toll on your body. You're still trying to figure out how to eat properly, how to rest, how to be a professional. And last year, he missed the end of the season. And then the knee surgery that he had in the offseason, where he wasn't really able to get any kind of basketball run, so he was able to lift, get the weight on. But you see the difference. He's going to be there. And he's been tentative at times, but you're right. The last couple of games, you're like, oh, okay, now we get it. And also having LeBron tell you, hey, shoot the ball. Hey, do this. I mean, look, think about it. When you're 20 and you're around a superstar, unless you're Kobe, you don't care, right? But these guys are still like, hey, we know whose team it is. And I think that's the factor with the Lakers, too, is these guys – in the beginning of the season, I think we're still in awe of like, hey, that's the guy I grew up watching.
Right.
Now he's on my team. Hey, now I can actually text this guy instead of playing him in the video game. It's different.
Bethel Durant joins Gwen and Chris here. Coach Quintero sitting in for Chris Ello. Bethel does a lot of good work for Spectrum Sports as a contributor, as well as he's a new host of LA Times Sports podcast. Bethel, I see the narrative already shaping in the media right now. This story comes out about LeBron wanting Carmelo. A story is immediately put out behind it saying the Lakers don't want Carmelo. What's the real story here? Because Carmelo's been been available for quite some time now, and the Lakers hadn't really gone after him. Yet they've playing better basketball now. Why all of a sudden would they be interested in him?
Tony, you're such a member of the media now. You just said the narrative. Like, that's what it is. Look, I don't want to be that guy, but it's clickbait. Hey, Carmelo is going to be the guy that can get clicks, and we can do it. We can easily do the basic sports talk radio of like, will Carmelo come to the Lakers? Why is he better? Your take, hot take. Like, but in reality, I'm right there with you. You're an NBA fan. You're a basketball fan. You're looking at this. Why interrupt what you got going on right now? We just talked a lot the last couple of minutes about the Lakers are still trying to find their identity. They're still trying to get young guys to figure out their roles on teams. Then you bring Carmelo, and it's like, for what? Do I see it happening? I mean, I'm never going to say no, because if he's going to come, he's going to come on the cheap. But right. If you're Carmelo, are you really going to go and take one of those like grandfather roles where you're going to be a mentor to kids? No, this fool still thinks he can get buckets. Like, he still thinks he's like the main guy. And if you're not working out in Houston, you have Chris Paul feeding you, what are you doing?
It's a good point, Beto.
Hey, let me ask you this about Luke Walton. You know, he took a lot of criticism that one day after Magic apparently took him to the woodshed. And all of a sudden, the Laker team has started to play much better. And the one area where they really stepped up their game hasn't been on offense. It's been on defense. So how have you seen Luke make adjustments as a coach already, Beto?
Luke is Luke. He hasn't really changed much. And you know what? We forget how young Luke is as a coach.
Yeah.
But his answers when you're around the media, he answers everything, right? The situation where Magic was telling, he's like, you know what, that's between Magic and I. He's not going to go and get into the battle with the media about who he's talking to or even about his players, a la Phil Jackson, who used the media to manipulate his guys. But with Luke, the players are also buying into it. Like, coach, I mean, you know, defense. He's going to nod his head and say, yeah, but if they're not buying into it, they're not going to. And I think a lot of that has to do with guys knowing their roles and what they're expected. And Luke has been quick, from what I've been told at practices, to just ride dudes and let them know, like, hey, LeBron's on the floor. You're not going to get a bunch of buckets, but you got to figure out a way to get onto the floor, and that's going to be with the defense. And that's what's changed with the Lakers, too. The last couple, see more bark from these guys, some bite from them. Like, they've been playing with more energy.
Yeah.
And that, I think that of that has to do with guys being challenged by Luke also mentally. Like, hey, if you want to play, get out there and perform.
Beto, I got one more question before we let you get out. The LA sports scene is popping right now. You got the Lakers, unfortunately the Clippers, you got the Chargers, you got the Rams. Which team is making the most noise out there? I know the Rams. We watched that game on Monday Night Football. It was amazing to see the Coliseum like that. You look over at the Staples Center, that place looks like it is live and jumping. Which one of these teams in LA is ruling right now?
Look, what are we? You're calling me to talk about what?
The Lakers.
You ain't calling me to talk about anything else. And I know that. Like, it's the Lakers are the ones that move the needle. Like, once Dodger season's done, all right, let's put all of our attention back on the Lakers. And that's what it is. It's Lakers, 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 because it's LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. Look, I feel bad. Like, I cover the Chargers. I did a post-game show. But they have a good team. Nobody cares. Like the Rams have a heck of a team. Jared Goff can walk into the Staples Center and sit courtside, and they're going to say, hey, let me see your tickets. And I'm not hating. It's just the reality of it. It's when the Lakers are good, there's nothing bigger right now. And the Lakers right now are in – Tony, people are so excited because they're in the top eight. Oh, my goodness, they're right in the top eight. Like, yeah, but they're two games away from being out of the top eight, too. Like, it's everything is getting dissected because it's the Lakers, man. It really is. And you know this. You played here when the Lakers were good. When they're balling, nobody else is paying attention to you. I mean, I forgot that Doc Rivers was given an extension.
Yeah,
I mean, didn't even notice.
You're 100% right. When the Lakers are playing good basketball,
everything else is on the back burner.
It doesn't matter what's going on. You could have the best other teams in whatever respect of sports. It is not going to move the needle like the Lakers.
Let me ask you this real quick. In San Diego, how do the Lakers rank down there?
They do well.
You know what? There were Laker fans long before the San Diego Rockets came in the late 60s. And I was one of them.
Hey, Beto, we appreciate you coming on, bro. I'll be looking for those boxing gloves when they get in the mail, too, by the way.
Man, you put him to work.
I wish you'd send him a headgear too.
No. I'm not actually fighting now. I'm just in there getting the glove.
I'm getting worried. I might want to send a mouthpiece also.
Hey, you know what? Just remember, the bag doesn't hit back, so you're good.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I like doing it. Beto Duran, thank you very much, brother.
See you, gentlemen.
5:19 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Coach John Katerra sitting in for Chris Ello. Gwynn and Chris, 97.3 The Fan. good part of the show right here. Coach's Lolita's High School Preview.
Well, we'll get to that. It's kind of nice to be sitting in here on a Friday, and when the head boss walks in and says, hey, you guys are doing a good job, make you feel good.
I mean, you guys have been doing a terrific job. We boost you guys up every time we have one of those games because you guys do a terrific job. I mean, you and Braden hold it down.
Well, we have a good time. No game this week. Next week, we got four teams from San Diego playing for state championships. Cathedral Catholic will be playing. You've got Orange Glen, who won a CIF title for the first time in 51 years, believe it or not.
Wow.
Did not won a CIF title since 1967. You've got Lincoln High that is playing great football. And you got San Diego High that is playing a great football. I actually went down Tuesday night. Paul Rudy from KUSI invited me down to the Prep Pigskin Gala, and it was great. I sat next to a couple of gentlemen that are working for the new football team, the Alliance of American Football, the San Diego Fleet.
Was Eric Allen one of them?
Eric Allen was not one of them, but Eric Allen's son was there the other night.
I know.
Really
I saw
good
that.
Junior, led the Cathedral Catholic Dons in tackles. But they had somewhere between 850 and 900 people on the USS Midway. John Carney, I actually walked in with John Carney. It was great to see John there. And Tino, or piece of Tino Samoa, who played at Vista.
Yeah.
And he's around probably a little bit older, just a little bit older than you.
Yeah.
Great player, played in the NFL for a long time. And, you know, there were several former NFL players there, but it was really great. And, you know, I've gotten to know a lot of the kids. A couple of the guys I really like. Well, I like all the kids, first of all.
It's just so nice to see San Diego high school sports elevated to the level that it is now. I mean,
yeah.
Going back to when I was in high school.
It's big time.
We always felt like it was big out here, but now watching the prep show and how we cover high school sports out here, it's certainly a lot bigger. And it's so nice to see the young kids get a platform like this.
Well, you know, it's really cool. I've met a couple of the kids from San Diego High, Jaden Wickware, real good defensive back, real good athlete, and Raiden Hunter. And what was interesting about talking to Raiden Hunter the other night after the banquet, his uncle is a guy by the name of Wally Henry. Wally Henry played at Lincoln High, played at UCLA, and then played in the National Football League and played in a Super Bowl and still lives here in San Diego. I think anybody you know, my age or a little bit younger or older would remember Wally Henry because he played for Dick Vermeil at UCLA and played for Vermeil with the Philadelphia Eagles. But, you know, there's so many great athletes, and I'm excited because I've gotten to know a lot of these guys. I'm really excited on December 19th when the early signing period, you know, you used to have to wait till February. Now you've got that early signing period. We got a lot of kids that are going to sign national letter of intents on the 19th and 20th of this month.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the San Diego high school sports, not only is the platform better, but the athletes have gotten better, and you're seeing far more kids go D1 and sports all across the board. It's not just your major ones and football, baseball, basketball, but across the board, you're seeing San Diego represented very well in the college facilities around the country.
Oh, there's no question about it. And I think the other thing, there's a couple of reasons. I think number one, the training, you know, the off-season training, everybody's got their own personal coach, which is big. But I also think the high school coaches do a heck of a job, too.
No
I mean,
doubt.
These high school football and basketball, baseball coaches, I mean, they're working on development. And not just those three sports, but the female sports. We have so many girls volleyball players and soccer players that come out of this town. And every sport in San Diego is really good. It is really good, and there are a lot of people here that know how to coach that sport.
No doubt about it. You want to get to your Lolita's high school preview?
Absolutely. We'll get to the Student Athlete of the Week brought to you by Lolita's. They've been in San Diego since 1984. Now sit back and relax there a
little bit. I plan on it. I certainly plan
okay?
on it.
Because I want you to listen to this one really good on the girls. And I didn't do this, you know, just to blow air up your skirt here today, okay? I did this earlier in the week. The girls is a young lady by the name of Colby Neal. Colby Neal, a sophomore basketball player at Poway High School. Okay, Colby has led the Titans to a 6-1 start, averaging 23.7 points per game and 12 rebounds a game.
I'm about to get out and watch this kid.
She exploded for 33 points against RBV, Rancho Buena Vista, and 30 points against San Pasqual. So there you go. Colby Neal, a sophomore basketball player at Poway High School. This week's Lolita Student Athlete of the Week on the girls' side. Now on the boys' side, this is the game that we had last Friday night. Between Narbonne and Cathedral Catholic. Yeah. You were out there. Chris was out there. The man who ended it with a field goal, Dean Janikowski, senior kicker, Cathedral Catholic, in the action-packed California, Southern California Division 1A championship game. Janikowski whacked a 40-yard game-winning field goal with a minute 42 to go as the Dons were lifted to a 24-21 win over Narbonne. Cathedral Catholic now will move on to play next Friday night, December 14th, at Cerritos College for the California Division 1 AA championship. And the team that they will play is playing later tonight. There's a ball game up in Northern California tonight, and whoever wins that will take on the Cathedral Catholic Don. So congratulations to Colby Neal, sophomore basketball player from Poway, and senior kicker Dean Janikowski from Cathedral Catholic. And by the way, Dean Janikowski will walk on at Washington State as a punter place kicker for Mike Leach.
Congratulations to the young men and women out there who have made this high school preview that Coach Quintero does every week.
7-3 The Fan SD.
Exactly. Gwynn and Chris. Coach John Katera sitting in for Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. It's time for the the countdown. And
Gwynn and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
Yes, indeed, the countdown is here. We try to mix up these categories every week. Sometimes, most of the time, it's sports. Occasionally, it's movies, food. This week, we're back into sports. And top five free agent signings. Now, we're not talking all time. We're talking about our personal top fives. And because Coach John Katera is new to this, I will go first. Top five free agent signings. Number five for me begins with Deion Sanders. He signs as a free agent to San Francisco on a one-year deal, wins a Super Bowl. Very next year, signs as a free agent, much bigger deal, to the Dallas Cowboys. What does he do? He wins another title. So, I mean, you bang for your buck. You went out, you signed them, you ended up with two championship, each of those teams. That goes down as a pretty good free agent signing in my book, Coach.
Well, I would agree with you, and I think the way I look at it, I'm probably going to look at this more as my favorite players, where they ended up. But I also want to pay homage to, I think, a really good Major League Baseball player who I think it really cost him his career when he fought the reserve clause, Curt Flood. Curt Flood's the one that opened this all up.
Yes.
And whether you agreed with him or didn't agree with him, the man stood by his guns, and it probably cost him his career.
It definitely cost him his career. And all of these free agents right now are benefiting from what Curt Flood sacrificed.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I think he was a good man, and you know, he stood for his principles, and he's made a lot of other families and people very, very happy, and the owners have the money or they wouldn't pay it.
Usually the first person to take a stand is the one that pays the price for it. Everybody else benefits from it, and that's what happened here. So.
Yeah, no question. I would have to say, you know, being a San Diego guy, I'd have to say the signing of Steve Garvey.
Oh,
because
very good.
Well, because he was a guy that we all hated here in San Diego because he was a Dodger, but also signified a great player and a winner. And I think when the Padres signed him, they knew they were going for the gusto.
One of the few times the Padres actually have gone out in the free agent market and benefited from it.
Well, they tried to do it that one time with Gene Tennis coming off his MVP World Series. Didn't quite work.
That sometimes happens like that.
Number four
for me, this is a sleepy one. 2003, Ivan Rodriguez signs with the Marlins And they go on to come out of nowhere to win a World Series against a really good Yankees team in 2003. I think everybody remembers the series in Chicago that happens to foul ball. Is it Bateman? Steve Bartman? Yeah. He ends up infamous in Chicago history there. But Ivan Rodriguez signs a one-year $10 million contract and would lead that team to a World Series. It was a really young team, and he was one of the big veterans on that squad, along with Jeff Conine, that they end up getting to that World Series, and not only getting there, but upsetting a big, heavy favorite in the Yankees.
Well, you know, I would say this year, and I mentioned it earlier, I went to a book signing last night, and he wasn't a free agent. Well, he was a free agent to be able to come over. He couldn't get the free agent money, but I'm really excited about Ohtani, and I'm really sorry he had to have Tommy John surgery. I'm not surprised, because I knew when he came over here, he'd had some problems. And they gave him the PRP injection, and that's just kind of a Band-Aid and a last measure type deal. But I'm really looking forward to the future of Shohei Ohtani, and you know, he's going to be, you know, he's going to get big money at some point, making a lot of money in endorsements in Japan. But I think all of us baseball fans really should admire this young guy.
No doubt about it.
Number three.
We'll move back into the basketball realm here. Shaquille O'Neal signs with the Lakers, and it didn't start out great. The first couple, 3 years of it was quite rough, but they figured it out. They go on to win three titles, him and Kobe together. One of the better free agent signings, I think Jerry West will say the same thing.
The Diesel.
He went out, convinced Diesel to come to L.A. with all the glitz and glamour. And remember, Shaq was an up-and-coming star in Orlando. They had just gone to a championship and lost to Houston.
They had Little Penny.
They had Little Penny and Big Penny, for that matter. But this was a big-time signing for the Lakers. It pretty much put him back into that Laker lore that had been lost since Magic had retired at that point. And he brings him back to prominence.
Well, I'll go with Shaq as well. I mean, Shaq, I was really sorry when him and Kobe got their little divorce up there. You know, he was a real personality guy. And, you know, I love him on TV and his commercials. You know, he's a fun guy. And, you know, I just you know, really enjoyed watching him play. And you know what? It was a lot like Wilt Chamberlain. He got fouled and fouled and fouled. And, you know, he'd lead on a guy or breathe on a guy, and they'd call a foul right on him. They call the game a lot different with those big guys. But Shaq, one of the strongest players in the history of the game.
Number two.
This is a 1993 NFL signing. He was the biggest free agent on the market. Reggie White goes from the Eagles to the Green Bay Packers. They would hoist that Lombardi Trophy in White's fourth year with Green Bay, but he wasn't expected to go to a place like Green Bay, right? He was coming, leaving a major market team in Philadelphia. He was expecting some big money from 1993, but he ends up going to a more of a homey place in Green Bay and really flourished from there.
Well, you know, I think, and I agree with you 100%. I would say, I'm trying to, I could go football or I could go basketball. I'll tell you the one that I'm excited about, and I could do a number one or number two on it. LeBron James.
He's coming up in mines too.
I mean, he's probably number one because it's the one that's happened the last. But I mean, LeBron James, I mean, somewhere along the line, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I was so excited. I was hoping and praying, and I really was.
Everybody was.
I was so happy he came to the Lakers. Lakers have been so bad for the last few years. I mean, going back to Mike D'Antoni's post-game press conferences, that was painful watching him try to explain how bad that team was.
Yeah, and that team shouldn't have been bad. They had a Kobe Bryant, a healthy Kobe Bryant still.
Yeah, but I'm not sure Kobe helped that situation with some of those young guys.
It wasn't the young guys that was the issue. It was Dwight Howard that was the issue that year.
Well, Dwight Howard, but Kobe had a hard time passing the ball, too. You love Kobe.
Kobe for life.
Kobe for life.
Number one for me is LeBron James. I mean, we could talk about how bad optically the decision was, but once he got to Miami, listen, they got to a finals the first year, they lost, they would return the next 3 years, and they would win two out of three. I think that move is going to go down, and now you can pretty much say if he can do the same thing here in Los Angeles, he's going to go down as one of the best free agent signings of all time. Anytime you leave a place and the place you arrive at starts winning championships, it's tough to argue. He went from being on his way to being the best player in the world to overtaking that title of being the best player in the world there in Miami. That's why he's got to be number one on my list.
Well, being a San Diegan, and I already sucked up to you giving the girl from Poway the award this week. Now she's won the award, Colby Neal. I think the greatest free agent signing in San Diego was, quite frankly, was Tony Gwynn. And the reason I say that is I know, and I'm not going to share it with our listening audience, but I know there were several occasions where your father could have signed worth a lot more money somewhere else. Your grandfather probably thought he should have. Okay,
he did.
But he stayed here and was true to his word, and he took the San Diego discount on more than one occasion. And I think, Tony's no longer with us, but you know what? Tony's with us every day. And, the impact that he made on our community on and off the field is it'll never be replicated. I'm sorry. We can talk about any athlete you want. Junior Seau's in the conversation. But what Tony brought to this community with everything he did, that was the best free agent signing in the history of San Diego sports.
I can't believe I didn't even think of that one, but...
You don't have to.
That was good. I mean, listen, my dad loved it here. He loved
Well, we loved your dad.
He loved this city. He didn't... As much as my grandfather and myself later on down the line tried to... pretty much done. After that, all these games seem to have playoff implications, I forgot one. Let's not forget about the Jets and Buffalo. They're also gone as well. But the rest of these games have a major impact. On our line now, Bleacher Report's Jason Cole joins us. You can see him catch him on Twitter at JasonCole62. Jason, how you doing today?
I'm great. My news is for you that I work for fansided.com now as the editor in chief.
Well, congratulations on the upgrade there.
Okay, no problem.
You're very welcome. Sorry for the misinformation.
No, that's okay. It's a little new. I've only been there a month.
So okay.
It's okay.
Well, I appreciate it. Let's get into this, Jason. The Titans, last night, they pretty much just bullied the Jacksonville Jaguars last night. Do they have pieces to make it into the playoffs this year? They're at 7-6 right now.
Yeah, they're close. But, I mean, they haven't appreciably changed from what they were last year. So, you make the playoffs, maybe you have an upset victory over another team that's not very good. I don't see that this year because I think the top five teams in the AFC are really good. Yeah. So I think that last seed is sort of getting there for show. But even if they win one game, let's say they post an upset in the first round, I don't see them getting any further than that. They're not a threat to get to the Super Bowl or do anything like that. Not in my view.
Hey, Jason, great to have you on. John Quintero, and congratulations on that new job, buddy. Doing a heck of a job. Hey, wanted to get your thoughts on Green Bay. I don't think any of us were surprised that Mike McCarthy got fired. We saw it coming. We even saw it maybe coming towards the end of last year. But your take on where that situation's at, and do you think Joe Philbin is the guy that ultimately will probably get that job, or are they just trying to get through the year and then they'll open it up?
Oh, I think they're just trying to get through the year and then open it up. I've seen Joe coach. I think Joe is a really good assistant coach. I don't think he is a guy that you can put in front of the big room, as they like to say, in front of, all 53 guys and have the room respond to him. I mean, I think all the guys like him and they think he's a good football man, but they also know that he's not the guy who's going to hold their feet to the fire when it's all said and done. So I don't think he commands the big room. They're going to have to find somebody who does. And this is not the year to really be doing that because I don't think there are a lot of guys out there. I mean, maybe if they want to really pay for, Josh McDaniels, but it's going to take a lot of money to get him away. Plus, I don't think McDaniels is the kind of guy who wants to go. Like, McDaniels really believes that his system is what has made Tom Brady so great.
Oh.
And, I appreciate the confidence. I always look at coaches and go, you ain't going nowhere without players. I think it would go against his sort of inner urges to want to coach Aaron Rodgers. Actually, it's kind of a weird situation. So Maybe they can entice him. We'll see. I doubt it. And then after that, you know, they're hoping that maybe John Harbaugh gets fired in Buffalo, because Harbaugh would be, you know, a qualified guy. I think that would be a perfect fit. After you get past those two, boy, you're trying to take advantage of the last 3 or 4 years of Aaron Rodgers. There's not a lot of, like, extreme qualified coaches out there. Now, you know, that's not an endorsement to have kept McCarthy, because I think McCarthy clearly had run his course.
Right.
But replacing him is going to be very tough.
Jason Cole joins us here on Gwen and Chris, new editor-in-chief of Fansided.com. Jason, you kind of torpedoed my next question, which was going to be who's the coach
that
they're looking. It's all good. Let's skip over to the NFC East. Who do you have as favorite? I know Cowboys are at the top of that division, but is there truly a favorite to win this NFC East?
Well, look, I think the Cowboys' defense, all of a sudden, the last three games, they're legit. I mean, that's a unit that you just go, whoa, wait a sec. Now, is that going to be good enough to get them to a Super Bowl? I don't think so. Because I think that I don't think they're going to be able to go on the road twice. Because if they win in the first round, they're likely going to have to go to New Orleans and go to Los Angeles and win. And I think that that's a little too much this year. I mean, but, you know, they can do some things and change games with their defense this year, and there aren't many teams that have that ability. I would say the only ones that really have that ability are them, Chicago, and to a certain extent the Chargers, because you now have Bosa and Ingram healthy. And when you have Bosa and Ingram healthy, you can cause a lot of havoc.
Jason Cole, new editor-in-chief of Fansided.com. Before we let you get out of here, we're going to have you tell us a little bit about what you got going there. But, hey, I wanted to get your thoughts on Phillip Rivers and the Chargers. How about that comeback last Sunday night?
Oh, spectacular. I mean, look, those kind of victories when you go into a place like Pittsburgh and you're down 16 points are victories that make your team believe that you can have a special season, and all of a sudden guys look and go, hey, maybe we can get this done. And they vaulted Pittsburgh in the process of that. Now they're going to have to probably go back to Pittsburgh the way that things lay out and do it again. And it's probably not going to be a 50-degree day. So it gets probably a little bit tougher the next time around, but they have that confidence that they can do that. And I think that the if you look at the top five teams in the AFC, you know, with San Diego and Pittsburgh, you know, San Diego. Can't get it out of my soul.
Hey, you know what? You're standing in line with a lot of other people.
I know. So, the Chargers. the Chargers, the Steelers, New England obviously is ahead of that pack until somebody knocks them off. And then you've got Kansas City in there. And who am I missing in there? But, yeah, Houston, obviously. I think there's going to be a really fun race among those five teams. And, you know, everybody's going to think it's New England, but if New England all of a sudden doesn't get one of the top two seeds, then I think this could make for a really interesting finish to the playoffs.
And Jason, you mentioned the Texans. They've won 9 straight after losing the first 3 of the season. And we've seen them put a run together like this in the past. Is there any worry that they might have peaked too early in this season?
I never buy into that peak too early
thing. Okay.
In football, I think you peak and say, okay, this is what we can do. We can get back there. I think that they have the combination of pass rushers up front. I think their secondary is a little weak. I don't trust it very much, but I think they do have guys up front who can change some games, not as much as the others. And a quarterback who's really interesting. Now, he takes too many hits.
Yes.
Right now, he's got to learn to get rid of the ball a little bit faster. But that's going to come along. I think he's that guy who's going to learn to get rid of the ball faster than, say, Mariota's done in Tennessee. Mariota still hangs on to it a little bit too long. But, you know, I think Deshaun Watson's a great leader. And I think that they have weapons around him. And they can be as interesting as anybody. I just kind of wonder about clock management and game management with O'Brien in certain games, and that could probably undermine them when you get into the playoffs.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about Jacksonville. Tony and I have been going back and forth. You know, we watched that game last night. It's been a rough year for Doug Marrone and the Jags and Blake Bortles getting benched. What do you make of that situation? Obviously, Bortles probably won't be there next year, but how about Doug Marrone? What are they going to do with that organization right now after a great season a year ago and just going backwards this year?
Well, man, I kind of go back to what I said before. Okay, you want to fire Doug Marrone, what are you going to get? You're not getting anything better unless Tom Coughlin says, I want to coach him. Which, you know, which could happen, right? I mean, definitely could happen. But barring that, I think you just go back, you're exchanging one decent coach for another decent coach, and I'd rather have some consistency. And I think that it's mostly about the quarterbacks.
Right.
I come back to that and say, look, you know, when you depend on defense, you can go up and down very quickly. In this league, because this is a league that's built on scoring during the regular season. So you really do have to have that quarterback, and that when that quarterback is unable to do it on a consistent basis, it infects the rest of the team. It impacts that the rest of the group. So I think they were really, truly undermined by the quarterback. And, you know, look, I get why they did it. I just said I don't believe in it. I would have made the leap and said we're moving on right now at the end of last season. Because I thought in the AFC Championship game, they played as if they were scared of their quarterback on the road. And you can't play scared of your quarterback when you're on the road.
Yeah, very well put. Hey, Jason, as we let you get out of here, tell us about your new job and what you got going with it.
Well, we got some great. This is a great week for us. We did our what we call our Fan 250. We're just coming off doing our Fan of the Year selection. We do an annual selection of the biggest fan in all of sports. And then we do a listing in sports and entertainment of the 250 best fan bases. The Cleveland Browns actually won. They beat Black Panther and Game of Thrones and every college and pro team out there. So that's a really fun thing that we do. It's a very comprehensive list. And then, you know, we're great at aggregation in terms of turning opinions and telling people what things mean, and I think we're going to get more. My job here is to increase our original reporting side of it, and so that's what I've been tasked with doing, and I better get it done.
Well, they got a good man on the job. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Jason. We appreciate you coming on. We look forward to talking to you again.
No problem. Anytime, guys. Be good. Thanks.
Gwynn Show, Gwynn and Chris today. Tony Gwynn Jr., Coach John Katara sitting in for Mr. Ello. Mr. Ello will be back in on Monday, but we're going to get out. And I've interviewed this gentleman for years. I love this guy. He's a great writer, covered Major League Baseball forever, and doing a bang-up job covering the National Football League now, continuing to work for the great paper, the LA Times. Mike DiGiovanna joins us on 97.3 The Fan. It's been a while, Mike. How are you?
Mike?
Well, I thought Mike was... Mike, you there?
I am now. What happened?
I don't know. I gave you this Hall of Fame introduction, and I guess we didn't punch the right button, but how you doing?
I'm fine. I completely miss it. I'm hopefully you, prop me up a little better than I am. You know, I appreciate that.
Well, what about... everything. Give us in a nutshell, what it's like with having two NFL teams right now playing as good a football as anybody in the league?
It's different. You know, we've been the desert, the NFL desert for 22 years. And yeah, I was here. I'm so old. I go back to the Rams and Raiders, and they had a couple years where they were both really competitive, and it always made it interesting. And then, poof, they were both gone after 94. So it's really exciting. I don't know how, from a fan standpoint, you know, how full the Charger bandwagon is, if at all, right now. But certainly from a Rams standpoint, you know, they kind of had a leg up on the Chargers coming here a year earlier. Coming back to a place where they played for 46 years, where they had a lot of tradition, you know, played in Super Bowls. So they had a definite advantage on the Chargers, and the fact that they are, if not the best team in football, one of the top two, and so exciting, I think it's really put a charge back into you know, just the whole football fandom experience in L.A. So, and now the Chargers are, you know, I don't think they're quite as good as the Rams. I'm still not convinced they are, you know, one of the elite teams in the NFL, but they are very interesting. You know, they play an exciting brand of football in a stadium where there's no bad seats. So if you're a football fan, it doesn't really get much better than that.
Mike, Tony Gwynn Jr. here. I was tipped off right after the draft by second baseman D. Gordon about Derwin James. Him and James go back a little bit. Tell us a little bit about this guy. He is just really lighting the defense up, lifting him up, I should say. And he's got to be one of the front runners for Defensive Rookie of the Year.
He is, clearly. He's already being touted by a lot of people who are way smarter than me as the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. And when you consider he was taken 17th overall, I can't remember the breakdown of offense and defensive players. I'm guessing he was probably one of the top 10. But, you know, most people thought he was a top 10 pick. Chargers jumped on him when they had the opportunity. And if you watch, like, the first half of that Steelers game last Sunday night, he, even though they were down 23-7, he pretty much kept that team in the game with his interception, with his play, and then he had a couple of big plays in the second half. He is he's long, he's strong, he's fast, he's physical, he's intuitive and instinctive, and you really this is only my second year covering the NFL in a while. I always thought for rookies, that sort of that transition from college to the pros took a solid year, you know, to get their feet on the ground and figure out what's going on. And really, since the second game against Buffalo, he's been like certainly a Pro Bowl caliber performer, maybe All Pro. I don't know, but he's been, probably their best defensive player all season. For a kid you just got in the draft, boy, that's really good for the Chargers.
We're visiting with Mike DiGiovanna from the LA Times, covers the National Football League. I want to talk about Anthony Lynn. I brought up to Tony earlier, you know, we were talking about Rivers, we were talking about Gordon, we were talking about Derwin James, and I said, you know, I want to talk about Anthony Lynn, because I go back to last year when they got off to that 0-4 start, and I'd listened to him. Here's a rookie coach trying to get his first win. That man stood at the podium, answered all the questions to the best of his ability. You could see the disappointment, but you also saw him knowing that he had something maybe down the road that was going to be okay, and you know, they finished very good last year. Could you talk a little bit, Mike, about covering him and what kind of guy he is on a daily basis, you know, as a coach and dealing with the media as well?
You know, I covered Mike Socia for 19 years in Anaheim with the Angels, and you know, I'm not going to put him in that caliber just yet. He's only in his second year, but he reminds me a lot of him in the way that he's very even-keeled. You know, you mentioned the 0-4 start last year. There was never any panic from him, never any real heavy criticism of the players, took a lot of the responsibility, felt like they were doing some things and just not getting doing some things right, not getting the results, you know, sort of that stay the course mentality. And then they started winning games and they get on a roll and they finish 9-3. And I think that did carry over a little bit into this year. I didn't cover, you know, the Mike McCoy teams, the Charger teams of the past decade, but from people you talk to, the players you talk to who were here, it seems like he's instilled a level of toughness and professionalism that, you know, I don't want to knock the previous staff because I wasn't here, but they've raised the bar in those areas. There's a chemistry here that maybe wasn't there in the past. These guys are really... You hear this a lot almost every week about guys playing for each other, about guys sacrificing for each other, putting the team ahead of their own personal stats and all that. And sometimes it's just lip service, and sometimes I think there's something to it. And this team does seem to have a camaraderie that I think starts at the top. You know, I think they've got two pretty good coordinators. They have some good coaches. But I think Anthony has... really instilled a toughness and a work ethic. And I think the fact that, you know, even though he wasn't a star NFL player, the fact that he did win two Super Bowls with the Broncos in the late 90s, you know, that carries some weight in that locker room.
I'm sure that carries a lot of clout. The players all chasing that same trophy, and he's got two on his mantle. Mike, I have to ask you, Joey Bosa returned in week 11. What has the coaching staff seen from him and as well as the defense overall since he's returned?
Yeah, I think he's gotten better each week. You know, he was really limited with the snap counts the first week, got a sack in the second game, and last week, you know, really the whole line, the whole D-line for three quarters didn't get much of a push against Pittsburgh. And then I think it was really early in the fourth quarter, Joey had a huge sack for a loss of 10 yards that really pinned the Steelers back and forced them to punt on two plays later. So I think what's going to happen is, you know, Melvin Ingram on the other side is probably getting double-teamed a lot. Teams aren't going to be able to focus, put as much manpower into blocking Ingram on that side. That's going to sort of level out the line. And I think that the combo, and we saw this most of last year, when Ingram and Bosa are rushing off that edge and applying pressure, it's going to really improve the whole defense. You know, the secondary doesn't have to cover as long. The quarterback's rushing doesn't have time to go through his progressions. That kind of pressure is really good for the Chargers, and it allows them to not have to blitz as much. That's one thing I've noticed last couple weeks. You know, if you saw that second game of the year in Buffalo, I think Derwin James blitzed about 9 or 10 times, and he really, really dominated that game. But as we saw with Pittsburgh, you know, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, you need Derwin back to provide some help to those corners. So if you can get a really good pressure up front with just four guys, it's going to really help your defense.
Hey, Mike, we'll let you get out of here on this one. And, you know, I'm really interested. I followed your career, and you talked about, you know, being with the Angels, and I brought it up when I introduced you today. And now all of a sudden Mike DiGiovanna is working and covering an NFL team. Could you talk a little bit about and I feel bad for the baseball fans because, you know, they got used to reading your writings, but now you're covering the National Football League. Well, what's it been like for you? I mean, it's almost like when you go into an NFL deal, it's like you're almost starting all over again.
Yeah, it was tough last year because I hadn't covered football in so long. Before I answer that question, I will say I still do cover baseball. You know, I'm going to be backing up with the Dodgers and the Angels next year as
good.
I did this past year. For me, it's just been a really nice change. You know, the pace is really nice. The road trips are a lot shorter. and the guys are, you know, I found the guys, I don't know, boy, it's tough to describe. The guys in the NFL, you know, we're not in that, and Tony can attest to this, the writers aren't in the locker room nearly as much in football as we are in baseball. Yeah. And we're not in there every day, you know, for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then after the game. It's limited access, so it's strange, but I think these guys just don't get sick of us as much as baseball players.
<And we're, laughs> Good point, Mike.
I'll be very honest with you, and, you know, it works both ways. I think some of the writers get sick of some of the players, too. They just don't seem to look at the reporters as suspiciously. A lot of guys are eager to talk to reporters, if, you know, maybe stretching that word a little bit. Certainly, as with any locker room, clubhouse, there are a couple of guys who maybe are a little tougher to deal with, but I haven't found the Chargers as a whole there to be any real difficult guys to deal with in there. And then, you know, I think Philip Rivers sets a tone. You know, he's so darn talkative and open, and every week, you know, just fun to talk to, and I think some of the guys follow the lead there. You know, so you have some veterans, Antonio Gates, Melvin Gordon, guys who are really good with the press. So I think that sets a tone, and I just think the fact that we're not just oppressively in there, you know, 2 hours, 7 days a week, I think it just helps the relationship. And the games I found are pretty cool. You know, once a week, it's an event. Every game is huge. Every game matters, and it's a violent, vicious sport. And one thing I will add is this is by no means in no way am I saying I don't respect baseball players. I have a ton of respect for them, but NFL football players put their lives on the line literally every week.
Agreed.
When you step onto that field. And there's something about that, that just from my perspective, you know, that I really respect. You know, and these guys catch a lot of flack for some of their political views, some of their protests. But, you know, they don't have guaranteed contracts. The concussion problem is, it can be out of control. The health risk of playing this sport is incredibly extreme. And they don't get to do it that long. You know, their careers are so much shorter than baseball players, NBA players. So I just think I have a respect for that.
Very well put, Mike. Hey, happy holidays to you and the family, and thanks for the time today. And great to read the LA Times and see your name up on those articles.
Same here. I appreciate it, guys.
Be well.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike DiGiovanna from the LA Times, and nice enough to join us. I've had him on. I remember one time interviewing him.